This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
the
be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
Huh. I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Hmm?
Sharon Lawson Bram, skidamarinky-dinky-dink.
Yeah.
Skidamarinky-do.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking hoe train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pie. Watch your mouth, you scraggly Canadian.
That's a bit much. You who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts, and we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be a Nation. Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening inside the mothership, baby, where we stay above the fray. We don't get involved in all that nonsense out there. So, of course, joining me, as always, is my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you doing?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 408 of the mothership. Yeah, baby. Your collection's on the network today.
Hold it close, Jeffrey Scott.
That's right.
So how you doing?
I'm well. A warm weekend and a warm Monday. We are in the throes of June. Your son's hair continues to grow at an alarming rate.
Yeah.
Looks great.
He's a wild man.
Pretty soon he'll have a ponytail like your daughter's.
It's growing like the swath of flies in my backyard because my wife has picked up composting. So we have a giant compost bin.
You can have a King of the Road match, Bunkhouse Buck, and
we dump a lot of crap in there. And when I open it to put more in, it's a fly haven. So,
then you pull that thing out of the what was that thing you pulled out of your out of the yard on Saturday?
That was not funny.
Stump or whatever it was.
My back still hurts, and I'm going to go play basketball tomorrow. So this is the perils of getting old, but we're there, and I'll never be as old as you. So that makes me feel good. But we'll never look as young, Scott, as our third man in the booth here tonight. Of course, he has. Joined us many times before, and I don't remember the last time he was here. Whatever. It's a couple of vaults ago. But, of course, he does scribe for Place to Be Nation at times. He is a podcast guest many times as well across the Place to Be Nation network. He has his own site that he does great work on. It's a big year for him over at lionsofliberty.com, and a big deal. They got their own little candidate going on now, so he can maybe mention that briefly, and that is Mark Clare. Mr. Clare, how are you, sir?
Gentlemen, what's going on? It's an honor to be here on the Place to Be podcast, as always, with you guys. And, I got a lot going on. Damn right. It's an election year, so everybody's paying attention to the Lions of Liberty to get our opinion and our advice on all the ways of the world.
Yeah, stupid election year screwed us up. You know, I was actually in your neck of the woods, and you had some stupid debate you had to cover on your website. We couldn't even meet up that night. I was there.
It happens sometimes. You know, I'm an important man in the Liberty world.
Very important man. Maybe someday we'll cross paths at a live event. Again, actually,
I just saw you a couple months ago.
What are you
talking about? was it that unforgettable? We had a wonderful afternoon tailgating before WrestleMania. Come on,
glorious hair was right there in that picture too.
That's right.
It looks like it's even grown longer in these pictures you posted from Arizona.
It's I have not been to a barber any recently. No, that's really what it is. I'm too lazy for haircuts. I just got over them at some point. So yeah, maybe once in a year I'll trim up. But no, you got to let it flow, man. Well, it's my style.
Thankfully, you weren't too lazy to join us here tonight because we are inside, Scott.
We are in the big steel box, otherwise known.
What's going on here?
We have a guest for show and tell. He's going to read poetry. Do you have any poetry tonight, Claire?
Oh, God. I got about 4 hours of sleep and barely made it here and barely even on this call. So, no, I don't have any poetry.
But okay. It was almost a haiku until the end, I think.
That was my poetry. That's a joke.
That's right.
It was very meta.
Well, that's okay because you're going to have to find some energy to get extreme.
And I'm an extreme expert because, as you guys know,
you went to Penn State.
It's been a little while because I went to Penn State. That's right. No, Jesus, you people. People make me sick. As you know, I've used to. We just haven't done it in a while because we're all very, very busy gentlemen. But, be a co-host of the Super Extreme Vault with Stephen Graham and Glenn Butler. So hopefully this will maybe re-inspire the extreme blood in our veins and maybe we'll get back on one of those soon. But as you know, Glenn's got his spectacular and Stephen is, I think he's compiling the next Pro Wrestling 100, Pro Wrestling Only, like top 5,000 wrestlers of all time for 2021 or something. So. We're busy folks.
I want you to get real extreme and just dump him from his own show. That's what I want. And then you and Glenn just.
Maybe I will. I'm just going to publish a super extreme vault. I'm actually recording this now. This is also the first episode of Mark Claire's super extreme vault.
Well, I'm glad we could be special.
And we're the guests. That's right.
Welcome, guys. It's great to have you here.
And this is where the big boys play started, too. You know, Scott and I were on, and then boom, they exploded.
That's right. But tonight, speaking of exploding, extreme explosions. Mm-hmm. In the vault, not talking Penn State. Tonight, we bring you ECW One Night Stand 2006. Now, last year, JR, of course, big time novelty.
Second night stand, though.
Right.
Isn't it?
Yes. You can have multiple one night stands with different women.
It could be different.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
The first we know, right? Summer nights, guys, huh?
Hey, all right.
In any event, we had one originally a year ago, of course, back in this building. More of a novelty show than anything else, other than the brand war that was going on. But on this show, JR, storylines a little more intertwined than they were a year ago.
Yeah, quite.
So let's dive in. June 11th, 2006. Live from the Manhattan Center. A.K.A. the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City. Of course, we've been here before. And now coming up, JR, on PlacementNation.com and our Vintage Vault refreshes, we'll be in this building quite a bit as we're beginning our journey through the early origins of Monday Night Raw.
And by the way, this show, Claire and I were talking about this off air, 5 days short of 10 years to the day, Scott, we're reviewing this show. So it all worked out pretty cool that we were touching on the CCW stuff right around the 10-year anniversary of it.
Well, you guys planned this out. You mapped it all out about 6 years ago so that you on this perfect day for one of your favorite shows.
We're like, oh, shit, we gotta taper back because we're going to go too fast. How are we going to ever plan to get One Night Stand exactly on the 10-year anniversary?
Precisely. Your attendance, 2,460, which is practically a sellout for that building. Your buy rate, 0.76, and your announcers, well... Well, JR, explain to you our announcers.
In a moment.
First off, why don't you get into the fun fact of how we got to this point?
Why don't we get to the fun fact of Sutton, and then we'll talk about all that.
Forgot about him.
So, sponsored by, you guys remember? You just watched it, Claire.
Pass.
X-Men, the official game. The theme song is easy.
Let the bodies hit the floor.
Yes. Bodies by Drowning Pool. The ECW Championship and Tag Team Championship had been vacated for 5 years, 2 months, and 1 day before being... was the tag reactivated for this thing?
They were in abeyance.
No.
That's right. Yes, they're being held in abeyance. So the tag titles remain in abeyance. The world's
but, of course, those two singles belts were held by the same guy.
Correct.
And that guy being, of course, Rhino, who was the champion when they closed up shop. Who were the tag champs? FBI? I don't even know.
No, wasn't during a roadkill, was it?
Was it during a roadkill? Right. Well, do this. I'll check it out. Do the facts.
Sounds good to me. So we get a few releases here. Roto-Rooter Animal released on June 6th. He was frustrated with the ideas for his character. We're getting turned down. Like, what can Animal have for character?
I know!
2006. Here's an idea. Put face paint on me. Give me some spikes and let me go out there and dominate everyone without selling. No, no, no. Oh, come on. I want, that's it. Release me. I'm a hot commodity. Like, where's he going to go?
I'm a hot commodity.
He went to Ring of Honor after this, right? Didn't he have a run there?
Yeah, he had a run with Brian Danielson, I think. Do you think he tried to call Jim Crockett?
Yes. Maybe Vern was going to give him a run again.
I can be in Greensboro by Thursday.
You were correct. Actually, JR, we each picked the last two tag team champions.
Called Vern Gagne. Wanted to get back in the AWA.
The last official tag team champions were indeed Danny Doring and Roadkill, who defeated the Full-Blooded Italians on December 3rd, 2000 at Massacre on 34th Street.
Animal there calls up Vern looking for a match with the Crusher and the Bruiser still.
The Crusher and the Bruiser.
All right, 18-11 was this TV record. On 6-4, in an interview with the UK newspaper The Sun, Hulk Hogan confirmed that himself and Vince McMahon had spoken 2 days earlier and that he reckons he and Vince would probably end up doing business yet again. In the interview, he asked what the challenge he had thrown out to Steve Austin, and he replied, "I've thrown that challenge out there. It's now up to Stone Cold if he wants to do a match. I hate the black people." On 6-5 to WWE Mobile, it was announced that Kurt Angle would have an open challenge at One Night Stand. The message continued saying the challenge can be answered from anyone inside a 4-, 6-, or 8-sided ring. So, of course, teasing. Maybe someone from TNA or the Octagon. On 6-6, also announced that WWE had acquired 75,000 hours of footage, making it the largest of its time. On 6-6, the reason why the fight between Jerry Lawler and Taz at head-to-head that we talked about last week was stiff was that it was due to the fact that they knew to make it look real due to the cameraman being at ringside, even though some had speculated it was legit due to their feud in the past. Vince was feeding both guys their insults through the headset. So we had talked a lot about that last week. Mm-hmm. It was also spur of the moment that Styles knocked off JR's cowboy hat. Remember, we had talked about that being funny. So that's about it from Mr. Sutton.
Did he really write that about black people? Sutton. So surprised.
Not good. In April, news began to leak out that Vince McMahon has settled upon resurrecting ECW as a third brand, effectively replacing Velocity, which had been recently moved to WWE.com. was decided that ECW would return as a brand on Sci-Fi Network in June. WWE officially confirmed the ECW rebirth on May 25th. To help build the pay-per-view and the rebirth, the company aired a special head-to-head special on June 7th, and the first official episode of ECW on Sci-Fi would air on 6/13.
Claire, didn't you used to write Velocity reviews in haiku?
Yes, I still do. Actually, I've been reviewing old episodes, and I'm gonna release them as a compendium. It'll be an ebook published by Place to Be Nation.
Did you used to review them for haiku?
Did you read them with haiku at the
dealer? It might actually be fun to do a whimsical look at old Velocities. Maybe that'll be my. That was very nice of you guys in my intro, by the way, to say I sometimes write for Place to Be Nation. I think the last time I took pen to paper was when I actually had to use a pen and paper because computers didn't exist yet.
It feels more recent than it is every time. And I'm like, every time you're on, it's like, yeah, I think you just wrote something. And then it's like 2014. Although you can check out the new handy index at PlayStation.com to track each and every piece podcast ever published.
That is correct.
So you can find out how embarrassing long it's been since Claire participated in anything. Yeah. With his back quickly deteriorating, preventing him from staying in ring shape that we've talked about a lot, Scott, JBL decided to step away from active in-ring competition. On 5/26, he lost his U.S. title to Bobby Lashley. Later that night, he lost a world title match to Rey Mysterio, and due to a pre-match stipulation, he retired. With ECW starting back up, Vince McMahon decided to move Taz to Sci-Fi along with Joey Styles and had JBL join Michael Cole to provide color commentary for SmackDown. He would announce his new gig later in the show. On 5/11, we talked about this last week, so we don't have to talk about it again, but Joey Styles, of course, had his big flipping out after Backlash, and 5/1, rather, and quit Raw, and, of course, would go ahead and join ECW. Jim Ross returned to take over the Raw booth duties with The King. And, of course, Scott, in your favorite fact section, this is New York's 20th pay-per-view. At this point, it was two more than California for all time.
Yes, 20th pay-per-view. So they hit 20 in 2006. So in 21 years, 20 pay-per-views, an average of one a year. And there were years, of course, that they didn't have it. So
fantastic extreme usage of math there.
That is great.
Claire, Scott and I talked about this last week, but real brief, what were your thoughts when they announced all this, that ECW was coming back, it was going to be its own brand? Like, I don't know, were you watching at the time, first of all?
This is actually shortly after my kind of dark period, my wrestling dark period, where I sort of just completely fell out of it. But I didn't watch it all from probably like late 2005 until around 2012 or so. But I always kind of followed it, you know, because I still had that connection. So every once in a while, I would go on, you know, some wrestling news site and read what was going on. So I was like vaguely aware that this was going on, but not in the way that, you know, I was so disassociated from it that it was just kind of like news passing by me. It wasn't something I was even captivated by, even though I was a fan of ECW in the day. I kind of knew it was going to be the WWE version of ECW. I mean, maybe this one show would be more closer to it, more of an homage. But as far as a weekly program, I didn't think I was gonna, you know, see a lot of the same things I saw in 1994 coming from you know, Philadelphia. So I can't really say I was too in touch with this whole situation.
All right, Scott, let's get to it.
All right, our opener.
Oh, actually, before the opener, I guess I'll take that.
Yes, okay. Yes. We did have one promo.
Like we mentioned, Styles and Taz calling the show. Paul Heyman opens up this year. Of course, last year, remember, he came out halfway through, but this year he opens us up. Thanks to fans for the return. It says that they're introducing ECW to a brand new global audience. Puts over a new show starting this week. Mentions how the TV deal is much better this time than last time when they were at TNN. And then he closes with claiming the rebirth of ECW. This is a nice bookend to last year, which was kind of a revival and a farewell in many ways, and now a rebirth, like Heyman says, of a new era. So I thought it was a nice little way to kind of put the footnote on last year's and the original ECW and welcome us to the new one. And I think we see that theme throughout the night. Like, 2005's edition felt very much like, here's all the old guys, here's a reunion, we're done, it's over. And this one, while it's still one I stand, they still bring back some old guys, it's very much a feel of active storylines, prepping for the show. Like, none of it feels nostalgic. Like, there's no video packages about the days of old like there were last year. So it's kind of a cool flow from last year to this year, I thought.
I agree. The only real throwback you see is the actual open itself, which has obviously the old clips, and it was the old, I guess it was the old TNN intro. And then they did an actual intro. They did a double. So other than that, you really didn't see anything, you know, clips or highlights of anything from the 90s or, you know, 2000 or whatever, except for the special open they did before the actual pay-per-view open. Right. So, yes, I agree. Very fresh, very different than a year ago. But some wounds haven't healed in the original ECW era, and that kind of goes with this match. In the battle of color commentators, and JR, this fit perfectly, and this was a good ending match for that long-standing feud. Lead us up to it.
All right. So in the weeks leading up to the show, Jerry Lawler, an odd intro, but all right. So Jerry Lawler ramped up his ritual in Torrance ECW like it was 1997 all over again. This time, though, he also started including Taz in some of his jabs. On 6-2 SmackDown, Taz challenged Lawler to a match at the pay-per-view. On 6-7 head-to-head, Taz and Lawler were both part of the commentary team and started the fireworks as the show came on the air. What started as a verbal spat escalated to a pull-apart brawl. Of course, you can hear more about that on our show 407 episode if you haven't listened to it yet. They would brawl again at the end of the show. On 6-9, Taz cut another promo eviscerating Lawler and announced he was quitting SmackDown to return to ECW as an announcer. Of course, this is also Taz's final pay-per-view match and his first pay-per-view since No Way Out 2002. He'll remain on TV as a color commentator for a while. We'll talk about that later, but his final record is 8-6, 2-1 at the Rumble, 1-1 at Mania, 0-1 at SummerSlam, 0-1 at Survivor Series, and 5-2 in these other events. So, here we go. Talking Taz, talking Lawler. Like we said, first match since 02. If you've been brewing for a long time, really, I mean, you go back to 97, Taz and Lawler were kind of at each other's throats a bit, and then again in 2000 with all the Jim Ross stuff, and now again here in 05. Spiked over the last year with the brand issues, that this is a perfect blow-off to everything they've had going on. Even when it was Raw versus SmackDown, King and Taz would go at it a lot. So it really has been building for quite a while. Lawler's anti-ECW, as always, stays true to his character, builds up some great heat. Styles calls King fat when he comes out for his entrance. King walks over and smacks Styles really hard, which is a good payoff to their kind of sniping on Raw. And of course, the King always being a JR guy. He really smacks the shit out of him when he comes out. So Styles comes down and jumps on King's back to a huge pop. King throws him down and goes for a pile driver, but Taz grabs a Taz mission for a quick tap out win. This is a great way to start the show. Blows the roof off and pays off the decade-long hatred and comeuppance for the King. Of course, Vintage Lawler shows ass as always. Never cares. So he'll always be the guy that gets the laugh on him in the fall at the end, as long as it means business. So he does it here. And I thought this was a really good start to the show. What'd you think, Claire?
It was perfect because we don't need to see actual Taz matches at this point. I mean, most of his WWF work was pretty much lackluster after that first year or so, which is, I think, why they shuffled him into the announce booth. So he did exactly what he should have done, which is just choke out Jerry Lawler. Lawler did what he should have done, which is, yeah, like you said, show that ass that he loves to show. So, and that's why he's one of the all-time greats, because he's so good at setting up feuds. He's so good at creating like a real feeling of hatred. And then paying it off every single time. So awesome way to start the show. They should know they had no business having a real match. This is exactly what should have happened, and it did. So 5 stars.
What do you think, Scott?
The quick 3 points. Point one: this is the Jerry Lawler that we love. You're exactly right, JR. 1997. He of course penned the term "extremely crappy wrestling," and what better guy to fire the show off than the guy that legitimately hates it the most? And that's pretty much him, so that works. Point two, you can tell that, I mean, like you said, the smack that he gives Joey, you can tell that, I don't say that they don't get along, but it's evident that there must have been some type of issues when Joey was Raw guy. And like you said, Lawler's a JR guy by nature anyway. And point three, like we said, very simple. This is exactly how it should have been. We didn't want a long 6-7 minute match. They just needed to go in. Taz need a lock on the Taz mission, original intro and all, which is great because I love Taz's entrance theme in ECW. And that's all it really needs to be. Quick, painless, and a big win for the new brand and the rebirth. So worked out.
I don't know if Taz even could have done like a longer match. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, he's a guy that's never done anything. So his neck, I mean, when they said his neck was fucked, it must have really been fucked because
yeah.
I mean, he never did a one-time match, a reunion match, an angle. You know, this was it. This is the only thing he did physically, really, since 2002. Maybe a scrape here and there, but as far as in-ring bell to bell. So, I mean, he must have really been in tough shape. And I mean, you know, obviously he got pretty rotund over the years, but just neck-wise,
yes.
For him to never risk another match was surprising because he seems like a guy that maybe one day would have gotten involved.
Right. No, I agree. And he, I don't think he really does anything again. So... it was, again, smart to just do a quick thing. As we said, Lawler shows his ass, and we get started. So there we go. Now, let's get into the actual show itself. And changing things up.
As part of the show?
No, I count it as part of the show, but it's almost like a prologue, like a prelude to the actual card. Like, it was a match, but it wasn't like, you know, the big pump-up start to the show. It was more like a prelude with the announcers and that kind of thing. Because then Taz, of course, joins us on commentary eventually. So I'm not saying it wasn't part of the show, right. But it's like the
so. I get it.
Okay. Well, you asked. All right. Next up.
I know, and I regret it. Every second since I asked, I regretted it, but go ahead.
Okay. Next up, we have a battle of two stalwarts, one coming back from injury, the other switching brands.
I waited all day for Sunday night. Eli and the boys under the lights.
I don't know if she ever sang the Monday Night Football intro. All right. How do we get to this feud, JR, as we begin the show with our second match of the night? Big one.
Yeah, it is a big one. On 529, Paul Heyman announced that Mr. McMahon will allow him to choose one wrestler from each brand. Paul revealed his pick was none other than Kurt Angle from SmackDown. On 414 SmackDown, Kurt Angle defeated Randy Orton in a King of the Ring tournament match. Angle won via the ankle lock and would ratchet it in again twice after the bout. The next week, it was announced that Orton's ankle was broken and that he would be sidelined because of it. It was later revealed that the vacation was really a 60-day suspension, going back to Orton's unprofessional behavior leading up to WrestleMania. On 6-5, Orton made his return on Raw, dropping Angle with an RKO. On the 6-7 special, It was announced that he and Angle would square off at One Night Stand, and he would get revenge for his broken ankle and kill the legend of ECW. And, of course, later that night, Orton eliminated Angle in the brand Battle Royal that we discuss, that he would eventually lose. Angle on ECW now, like we mentioned, a good fit as an anchor with a focus on intense wrestling and badass persona. I thought this is the best he's looked in a while. Orton, well, all year, I should say, has been the best he's looked throughout 06. Orton is a perfect ECW foil, a pretty boy douche, WWE prototype, who's just fully out of place here as he walks in, but in many ways fits. Like, he's just perfect for this match. Orton has fireworks, I thought, which was great too, which Styles and Taz rip and mock him for being a superstar. Orton tries to kill the buzz by stalling and preening. Angle goes right for the ankles. The crowd chants break his ankle. Orton bails to the floor, rattled. Back in, Angle grinds a tight side headlock and then embarrasses Orton with some Greco-Roman style, smacking Orton across the head and driving his face into the mat. The crowd has eased that up. Angle allows Orton to grab a headlock and then chucks him off and eventually hits a back suplex. Angle hits a post on a head on a hard charge and only gives Orton control because he made the mistake. I like how they kind of play that up. Orton slowly regains his wind and lands a few shots, but Angle grabs him and slams him hard to the mat. Orton hits a back elbow and goes right to work on the neck. Angle slips out and goes to grinding on the mat. Orton bites free, breaks free of a crossface, and or actually did bite, but it bit his way out of a crossface. Hooks his own chin lock and gets shit on by the fans. Orton avoids a German twice, but Angle finally catches him and pitches him with one. Orton tries to hang on, but Angle hits the triple Germans. Orton slides out of an Angle slam with an arm drag and follows a nice dropkick for two. Angle hits a back suplex out of a chin lock and hits an ankle Angle slam for a near fall. Angle grabs the ankle lock to a big pop, but Orton rolls out of it and gets a reverse backbreaker. Orton heads up top and hits a hard high cross body, but Angle rolls through and he gets a two count there. Orton lands a big clothesline and has really steadied the ship, proving himself yet again here in another big match. Orton reverses an ankle lock into a small package for a good near fall, and then Angle grabs an ankle lock again, and this time he hooks the heel for the tap and the big pop. I thought it was a really fun match. I thought it had a very unique style. Angle ate up the crowd and just picked apart Orton left and right on the mat. Orton started the shit-kicking and had another strong showing. It reminded me a lot of the Foley match at Backlash, how he just really earned respect for going toe-to-toe with a guy in his environment and getting his ass kicked as part of it. I thought Angle's a nice fit in ECW, gets his first big official win. I thought he was the perfect veteran and name to bring over there and help build the brand. Because he fits right in, and he had just done everything he could possibly do in, on Raw and SmackDown. So, Scott, what do you think of that?
I enjoyed the match quite a bit. Hard-hitting, stiff. I applaud Orton for kind of blending in with the way Kurt works. I thought it was very, very well done. Number one, I like the using of the show graphics, kind of the minutiae here. Like, the Raw guys had their Raw graphics when they came out and, like, that kind of stuff. They kept it very, very separate, and I like that. Number two, match had a great blend of, like we just mentioned, a great blend of technical prowess, sloppy strikes, stiff shots. Like, it was a perfect blend. You know, Orton's not polished like Kurt is, but Kurt's not really wrestling polished anymore. He's much more of a grinder now. Which brings me to my third point, and we're going to get more into this. We can get more into this topic in the next Vault, JR, because I know that's, sadly for you, the end of the line. But I feel like it's a shame that Kurt, this is his best character advancement. He's had a great 06. And I almost feel like he should have dived into this character like 3 years earlier. I understand he had the team angle in 03 with your boys, Shelton and I'm going to just
Haas.
I just blank. Thank you, Haas. And the, you know, the great team angle thing, but he wasn't a killer like he was now. And I think that kind of persona, like with Brock and through 03,
well, as a face too. Like he had
shown streaks
thing.
Of it too. Like when he had, right. You know, I remember I'll break your fucking ankle, Rock. I mean that he had shown like glimpses of that edge,
yes,
of that character,
yeah.
But I don't know if this was like I said, I wasn't really watching for the year or so prior to this. So I don't know if this was a continued evolution or was this more of a overnight, now suddenly I'm in ECW and now I'm just even more vicious or angry angle.
Well, I feel like he had been working this way since he went to, well, I actually think it started like mid last year with some of the Michaels feud, and then when he destroyed Eugene at SummerSlam and then into the Cena stuff. I feel like that's when the aggression really kicked up, was I'd say SummerSlam. But throughout 06, once he won the belt on SmackDown, this is the first time he's ever done as a face like this machine like monster killer guy. And I think that's what's made it so great, is he's not like doing anything goofy and he's not being like an angry prick like he was on Raw. He's just going out there and destroying people and doing it with this like quiet, you know, confidence.
He's like a, dare I say, a Chris Benoit.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, he's a Chris Benoit with maybe, you know, a little bit more charisma.
And yeah, and I think it's just a shame that, you know, what will end up happening in the next couple months, because I think this could have started a lot earlier. I mean, his frustrations during the Cena feud probably bubbled to the surface and kind of came out in the way he was when he came on SmackDown, won the belt. But overall, really fun match. Better than I remembered it when I watched it today. Very well done. And kudos to Orton, who's not the only one on this night to adapt to the surroundings. Well, he's a heel anyway, so it fit easy, but guys later on who aren't heels adapt as well. And we'll get into that in later matches. But I enjoyed this match a lot.
And I like how they're structuring this show kind of similar to an old ECW show where you get something kind of cool to start things off, which is like I would call that sort of Taz King segment, because it's more of a segment than a match. And then we get into, like, they usually start off with a good, solid wrestling match. Like, they don't do any of the extreme crap in that first match or two, because you're going to get plenty of that stuff later. So they give you, but they, you know, the ECW crowd also appreciates the really good wrestling. Right. So they give you a solid wrestling match, no shenanigans, just a straightforward match that both guys played perfectly, because I thought Orton did a really good job of, like, mixing in his sort of boring offense, you know, his headlock, his chin lock, but he played that up in the way of, like, yeah, all right, now we're just going to sit here. Oh, you want to see Angle's fancy, all his fancy moves? Well, no. I'm just going to sit here and do this chin lock you guys all hate while you chant boring, and I'm going to soak it up. The way he soaked it up, I think, was really a really effective move for his character.
And it's funny, too. It's almost like an evolution of that ECW style, because when ECW was ECW, the fans kind of respected and loved everyone. You know what I mean? Here, they had a pure heel they could root against, you know? So, like, it almost made it even better in some ways, Mark, to that old style they had, because it was hard to get this kind of pure hatred of a heel. I mean, they had it at times if they booked it right, but
the heels are the biggest faces in ECW.
Right.
I mean,
and everyone was a face because it was ECW, right? Everyone part of ECW is beloved by the fans because they love the company. But this, for the first time, we have this like real guy that just everyone can hate and come together for to piss on. So.
Almost like a Steve Corino, that one of the other guys. I mean, obviously not to the extent that Corino went out of his way to be a heel in ECW, but he's one guy who could actually get over as a heel, like legitimately in ECW, because of the way he came in with his whole anti-extreme thing. And Orton didn't really take it that way in terms of, but in the match, in terms of the actual playing out of the match, he sort of did. You know, he just kind of stuck to his very bland white boy, white bread audio, right? White boy, white white bread.
Now you're talking, brother.
That's what I'm looking for.
I got, but your point, Claire, you're on my mind.
to back that point up, Claire, even right after the Taz match, when Joey did like the single shot, like he used to do on the TV show where he would act kind of weird and just talk into the, they even got like the production down, right. That they didn't really do as much, you know, in the 05 show that they really did here, the way Joey would be on camera, kind of like he did on the original show in the 90s. So I definitely agree with you that they kind of catered the show and molded it to what an old ECW pay-per-view, even the free TV shows, were produced as. So I agree with you on that. So there you go. Kurt Angle gets the big win. I feel like it's one of his banner moments of his career late, even more than – I don't say even more than winning the World Heavyweight title, because he had won titles before. But I know he always had that feeling that he was being like shoved to the side, and I feel like he – felt vindicated. He went to all four posts. They redid the theme, JR. They went back to that.
Eliminate the. Then they put the extra in the beginning to try and kill the "you suck" out of the gate.
Right. So. But isn't that? Yeah, I know. But isn't that kind of like? Didn't they fix up the 01 when he was feuding with Austin in 01? Didn't they do that? That change the theme up a little bit. Maybe they didn't. I thought they did.
I mean, they definitely put a little.
Well, it's on the Volume 5. WWF the Music Volume 5. They had that kind of grizzled Kurt theme, which was sort of like this, but almost a hybrid. So Kurt Angle gets the big win over Randy Orton.
Waiting all night for Sunday night. Kurt Angle's been popping pills, but I'm sure he's all right.
All right, next up, JR. Fantastic little
face, Randy. Anyway,
fantastic little tag.
Won't be our problem when he drops dead.
We also have a team.
Throw Orton on his head. All right, let's go.
Okay. Our next match, one of the two teams that we just mentioned about one of the final ECW tag team champions, and taking on another team that of two ECW stalwarts of 99-2000. And a return, JR. Who was that return?
Tajiri!
What?
Returns. But sadly, it's his final pay-per-view WWE appearance overall. After leaving WWE for good, he returned to Japan, where he still competes. His final duty record, 5-14, going 0-2 at the Rumble, 0-1 at Mania, 0-2 at SummerSlam, 0-1 at Survivor Series, 5-8 at other events. We'll talk about this match, but then, Claire, since you've been really the closest to like his run of ECW, I wanted to get some thoughts on you, because I know Steven's a big Tajiri guy.
Oh, yeah. Steven is, and I mean, I really
all right, let's talk about
Tajiri.
It now, then we'll get into the match. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, I did like Tajiri back in the day, and then rewatching some of these, we kind of were just getting into, before our current sort of hiatus, just getting into the era of Tajiri and Super Crazy in 1999, and I think we've seen maybe two or three of their matches with each other, and yeah, I mean, Steven is rightfully very enthusiastic about Tajiri. I think he's might literally be one of his favorite wrestlers. I don't know if he's one of my favorite wrestlers like of all time, but he's definitely a guy in this era that we're watching of ECW that I really enjoy every time. He's not only just a really good wrestler, he's an incredible character. I mean, The guy's facial expressions, the way he can connect with the crowd, it's really impressive. And the evolution of his character into WWF, I think he's one of the few guys who didn't really get. Yeah, I mean, I guess he became a little bit of a cartoon when he was doing the Regal stuff, but they moved his character forward. I really thought that he was almost a better character in WWF because they let him show that personality a little bit more, and he really is a complete package. He really has so much charisma and his just ability to connect with the crowd without speaking, without saying anything to them. That's what's most impressive about Tajiri to me.
Yeah, and they used him, yeah, surprisingly well when he came in. Because, you know, one of those guys that they pick up and, yeah, you're kind of like, well, what are they going to do with a guy like Tajiri? And then he comes out and, yeah, he's, you know, the stuff with Regal is really good and that pop he gets.
I thought they would make him like an Asian massage therapist or something like.
the pop he gets, I think it was where I was at, the one in June in Providence, in 01 when he rips off the ECW shirt and he's got the WWE shirt, like, showing that he's staying with Regal, you know, they hug or whatever. Like, that was a really cool moment. No, they always used him pretty well, even when they made him the asshole, and they did kind of go a little racist with it when they had, you know, had him abusive to Tori and the kimono and all that stuff. But even that, he was, like, you know, interesting in the character. Yeah, no, he's a great. I mean, Steven's contention is what? That he's like, he was the best in the world in 99? Is that the big thing he talks about?
I believe he does say that, yeah.
So, you know, maybe he's right. Who knows? It's rare, but maybe. All right, so let's talk about this match here. FBI has Big Guido this year. No Sal, sadly, yet again. Tajiri back for this show. Crowd gives him a hot welcome back. A real good mix of talent. Tony Mamaluke and Crazy start off. Trade off early holes to set the tone before ramping up. Tajiri gets a few shots in as a crowd chants Nacho Libre at Super Crazy. Of course, that movie had just come out in 06 or 05. It was around there somewhere, right?
06. Yep, 06.
We get more back and forth as everyone's just waiting to get things to get a little bit wild. Crazy heats up, gets a standing moonsault for two. Guido and Tajiri tag in, which the crowd loves. Both run through some offense and trade submission holds, and that breaks down to a double tree of woe. Dropkick by Tajiri and Super Crazy. FBI ends up on the floor, and Crazy hits an acai moonsault to perfection. Back inside, Big Guido trips up Crazy and smacks him around. Mamaluke gets a flapjack into a half crab into a camel clutch, leading to Guido missile dropkick into his face. Tajiri comes in and kicks everyone down. Tajiri and Guido trade kicks. Tajiri hits a spin kick for two and the double handspring elbow. Tajiri and Crazy get stereo tarantulas and they kick down Big Guido. And then FBI comes in and gets a double fisherman buster on Tajiri for what I thought was a surprising win. I mean, when it first happened, it caught me off guard. And then I thought about it and I'm like, well, it makes sense because they're sticking around for ECW. Because this is something we didn't see last year. These guys actually hanging around. And Tajiri has just gone back to Japan. So having him take the loss made all the sense in the world, even though the way the match is being built and the way everyone was getting into it, it was screaming for Crazy and Tajiri to win. But at the very least, they dominated the match. I thought it was fun. You had a bunch of classic spots, and both Tajiri and Crazy are awesome. And, I mean, I think Tajiri would have been a perfect addition to bring back to ECW, but from what I recall, I think he was, like, wanted to go back to Japan, right? Wasn't his wife... Didn't she do something there? Was she like a news reporter or a doctor? It was something legitimate, yeah. Right? Like big, and that was part of the reason.
And he was writing. He was writing books, or he was trying to be an author or something like that. He was taking like a different career path. Yeah,
yeah. And now obviously he still wrestles. But I knew he wanted to go back there for a specific reason. But he would have been a cool addition for ECW. So long story short, FBI win. Mark Clare, what did you think?
I too was also surprised that they won, but like you said, that I immediately thought the same thing. Oh, they're probably sticking around, and maybe, and I guess these guys aren't. But yeah, it was a very. I really enjoyed the kind of the chain wrestling versus the high flyers is basically the dichotomy here, and because and Mama Luke and Guido are always going back to their mat moves, and I really liked the couple moments we got to. But actually, both teams did a lot of cool double team. We got the double Fisherman Buster, like you said, for the win there. And then they did the Stereo Tarantulas, the Stereo Kicks in the corner. They worked really well as a team, and it was kind of really a really good tribute team to Jerry and Super Crazy, because they're two guys legendary for their feud with each other. They're great matches with each other, and they're kind of just like coming together for this one night. Like, hey, everybody remembers us. Everybody remembers the great matches we had together. We're gonna team up this one time. Put these guys, these young bucks over, and go right off into the sunset.
Suck it.
So it worked until the post match. I don't know. That seemed random to me.
Yeah. What'd you think, Scott?
Love the FBI. Always one of my favorites. But as we mentioned, JR, it's not the same without Big Fat Sally Gratz. It's not the same. What could he be doing in 2006? Gotta find him somewhere.
Probably having open heart surgery.
Yes. Number two, just to back up what we've been saying about Tajiri, he looked awesome, and he kind of had that look, like that early 80s Kabuki kind of mysterious Asian killer look gimmick, different than his WWF. And I don't discredit his WWF run at all. Obviously, they had to book him differently in that run. He couldn't be what he was in ECW because WWF didn't think that way. But I feel like on this night, he had that look back again, that killer Asian like mystery look. Where he was going to go out and hurt people, and I think that's fantastic. Worked perfect. And number three, this is just a fun match in general. I mean, a lot of hard hitting, guys throwing themselves around. It seems like two straight years, everybody brought their working boots for this show. Really wanted to put everybody over. I almost think that, and I agree with you, Claire, that Big Show thing at the end was kind of random, but.
Did they just not have a match for him? They're like, well, you gotta come out and destroy people at some point. So
it's weird because they just did the big turn, you know, that Wednesday before.
Yeah, I think it was just to put him. Yeah, so I was going to mention that. So Big Show comes out, destroys all the FBI. So I think it was really just to build his cred as a ECW monster. Like, I mean, again, going heel, refreshed. But yeah, I think that's all it was. Like, I mean, you know, FBI gets to win. To Jerry's the bottom of the rung because he can take the loss, he's leaving. And then FBI is a rung below Big Show, who I'm glad they didn't force him into a match here, but you had, I guess, I mean, if he's going to be one of your, for better or worse, he's going to be one of your top guys on the brand, it makes sense to have him do something here, right? So
right.
I guess.
I agree.
I mean, FBI is probably the easiest to feed, although I would have maybe just had him come out and beat the shit out of Tajiri, you know? That's
I mean, with the video package earlier in the night, you almost thought he was going to be a part of the main event angle because they had him, like, attacking Cena, and they make him out almost as the biggest, like, the number one heel, I guess, in ECW, and that just kind of didn't seem – it wasn't the storyline for tonight anyway.
Right.
See.
Yeah, and even though they didn't – I just lost my train of thought. Even though they just had a big tag team with Kane, another big show in like Big Guido as a tag team in ECW for a few matches would have been good, but obviously Big Show
the
had
bigs.
The bigs.
The bigs,
right.
Guido and Show.
Guido and Show. The Big Guido Show. So there you go.
Big Guido and Big Show.
Double crap on a stick.
So
the FBI win, Super Crazy, might be hanging around, and Tajiri goes back to Japan.
Been waiting all night, all day for Sunday night.
Big next
Sal eat a pizza in just one bite.
Just one bite.
So now we go up to the balcony, Scott, again this year.
Yes.
Where JBL returns. Of course, remember, he was a big part of last year's show, where he was kind of the main foil for WWE stars, him and Eric Bischoff against ECW. So, of course, again, he dumps all over ECW, calls it backyard garbage wrestling. The crowd chants, "You suck dick," and JBL says, "There's no women in the crowd, and they are fruit booties." JBL makes fun of Blue Meanie. This felt so vindictive. Like, Blue Meanie's been off TV since, like, the August before. Nobody really cares about him, you know what I mean, like, at all, like, as watching this show. Or even probably the fans, even in the crowd. And, like, he has to bring it up. Like, just because it's been eating at him since, you know, they punished him for it. So he makes fun of Blue Meanie for crying about getting his ass kicked last year. And says all the fans whined on the internet about it. So the crowd shits all over him as he's running through his material. JBL puts over Vince. He makes fun of Taz for leaving network TV for sci-fi. He says WWE made him a household name, but the Star Trek geeks love sci-fi, and now they'll get their ECW 2. I think he's yelling at Glenn Butler, to be honest. JBL says Taz would have been fired anyway, because JBL is now the voice of SmackDown alongside Michael Cole, and he puts over all his outside business activities. JBL makes a Taz sitting on a phone book joke. Taz says JBL and Cole's the blind leading the blind on SmackDown. JBL wraps up. Now, there's a good promo for the most part. The Star Trek jokes were kind of out of left field. Like, I get that he's making fun of sci-fi, but is that like a thing? It's like Star Trek geeks love ECW.
That's the go-to for all nerds love Star Trek. I don't know if there was any Star Trek show or movies out at this time at all.
I guess my beef is like ECW fans to me. I don't know. Were they the dorky fans? I guess. I mean, to me, like, when I think like dorky nerdy
if you're
fans,
a heel and you're JBL, they are.
I guess. I'm just thinking like Ring of Honor, like that type of fan now is like the indie fan. But ECW to me always seems like a bunch of kind of stoner, you know, dopes. You know, I don't know. Like not like not nerds. You know what I mean? They didn't feel like nerds, ECW fans. But I guess maybe they were. I don't know.
I mean, well, it's like,
the dumb.
It's nerds calling nerds. Like, aren't all wrestling fans sort of right. nerds in a way? I mean, and then we're like, and then what? There's a subsection of other nerds. I did love that JBL was just, you could tell how much fun he was having here. He was just soaking it all in. And oh my God, the one, when they do the you suck dick chant, and his response is just unbelievable on the fly. First of all, I can't even believe this was even on pay-per-view aired. I mean, it shows you how much things have changed in the last 10 years about what we consider acceptable in society.
And that wasn't the first time they did it during. I think they did it during the Kurt Orton match too. I think they did.
But the way he responded was just gold. He said, "I don't see any women here, and you're chanting about a male organ. So who's the Fruit Loop now?" Or he said, "Who's the fruit now?" Or something like that. I love that he used the fruit booty. Yeah, I just this is the way he said, the way he improv that line.
He's
I thought
fruit
was pretty
booty.
Yeah, it was
just so dickish though. It really was.
I guess my only issue is that I mean, I know there's not going to be a payoff to this segment, or maybe there will be later on that I don't know about, but not tonight. So I feel like JBL should have, I don't know, gotten his ass kicked by somebody later. For a second, they cut to a shot of Taz. They see him unwrapping his fist, and I almost thought Taz was going to like go up to the balcony and choke him out or something. But
I think it was just their way of making sure everyone knew that JBL was taking over SmackDown now, because they didn't really have any other time to promote it, and then just solidify Taz's decision, I guess. I mean, and JBL kind of got his last year, so maybe they figured that was kind of the payback. And I mean, it was a one quick appearance, but yeah, I mean, it is weird. You think they could have had someone go up there and just jump him, throw him out of the balcony or something.
Throw him off the balcony. That would have been really, ridiculous. All right. We have our first of two title matches this evening, because one big thing that they kept talking about on this night was could the new ECW steal both world championships from WWE? And our first of those matches is now, JR.
Well, in 6-2, it was announced that Sabu would challenge Rey Mysterio for world title of the pay-per-view. The next week, Mysterio, guess what? Lost a non-title match on TV to Finlay this time, thanks to interference from Sabu. After the match, Sabu continued to assault Mysterio, putting him through a table. After one night stay in 2005, Sabu returned to TNA, where he competed through April of 06. Shortly after his release, he signed a deal with WWE to compete and become an official member of the new ECW brand. Sabu, kind of one of those guys, that, you know, you always think of Sting, you know, was always the big one, like who would never signed AJ Styles till recently. Sabu was kind of in that boat, too, because, I mean, he had appeared on Raw back in 97, but a guy that had never officially competed for them that was a big-time star. I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to say he's a bit of a, I don't want to say joke now, but, I mean, you almost forget how big of a deal he was in, like, 94, 95, 96 indie scene, and what he was doing was, like, revolutionary, and, you know, what you'd read about him in you know, magazines and on, you know, the burgeoning
internet.
He's
possibly the most over guy in ECW for one point, maybe tied with Sandman. Right. I mean, those lights go out and it's, I mean, the crowd goes insane because they know that Sandman's coming.
Sabu.
Fucking Sabu, whatever this guy's name is.
But even his indie stuff before that, he was like such a buzz about what he was doing on the indies, you know, in addition or right before the ECW stuff. So, you know, he was a big name that had never, ever really signed with WWE. And we get a couple of those, but I thought he was one of the biggest. So it was kind of cool that he was finally, finally on board. So Extreme Rules match, world title match, you know, kind of a dream bout in many ways, too. Like in 95, I mean, I don't know if they ever met, maybe somewhere along the way. I don't think they ever did in ECW. So pretty pretty cool. Sabu sells the amazing presence and feel to him, I thought. Like, he still, everything still is there with him. Ray has his WWE music, but he learned from last year as he comes out in his old ECW tights. And I will say, as poorly as his reign has been, I thought it's pretty cool that as world champ, he gets to return like to this arena, to ECW at the level he's at. You know, I thought that was pretty neat for him. Both men grab chairs to start, but they don't use them. We get some mat work, and then both grab the chairs again and throw them at each other. Sabu hits a springboard spin kick off the chair, but Ray hits a drop toe hold into the chair. Sabu bashes Ray with it in the head, and then sets up a table from the apron to the guardrail. It feels to me like Ray is going pure garbage style here to win the fans over after last year's disaster, where he like ignored everything to do with ECW and just like wrestled a WWE match. It's like he got burnt so bad that he comes out here and he's just going, you know, full on hardcore. So Sabu puts Ray on the table and tries to springboard dive, but Ray rolls away and Sabu crashes to the floor. Back inside, Ray hits a springboard moonsault for two. Sabu comes back with a guillotine leg drop for near fall. Ray puts Sabu on the table on the floor and does a springboard senton into it, breaking the table. Ray picks up some momentum but misses a springboard dive into the corner that allows Sabu to spring off the ropes for a leg lariat. Sabu hits a triple jump moonsault for two. Ray dodges an atomic Arabian facebuster and then kicks Sabu into an open chair and tries a springboard senton, but Sabu moves and he lands hard on the chair. I thought that was a cool spot. Sabu then smashes Ray in the face with a chair. Crowd is super into this match, and Ray is like completely earning all of his credibility back as every minute unfolds. Sabu puts Ray on the propped up table and does a springboard into a DDT through the table. Both men get wiped out, and they actually end the match in a draw. We get a loud holy shit chant, but then everyone kind of turns on it. You know, I thought it's a tough finish, especially in this environment. But who do you have lose here? I mean, Ray has lost enough, and Sabu is going to be one of your top guys on the new brand, so you can't quite have him lose. You know, I thought it was a great match. It got Ray back into the good graces. He took some crazy bumps. He worked in old hardcore style. I thought it was arguably maybe the best match of his title reign so far. Sabu felt like a star. I thought the pacing was good. I thought the crowd was really into it. I like this match a lot more than I remembered liking it at the time. I always remember the finish and being disappointed, but it really stood out to me tonight, or rewatching it as one of the on a card filled with big matches like this was. You know, on many nights would have been the best match. So, what did you guys think, Scott? What did you think of the match, and what did you think of the finish? Is there another way you would have went about it?
I like the match. Definitely, Ray decided to dress for the party because not only did he wrestle differently, but he actually wore like long regular tights instead of his usual, you know, bell bottoms, and he had like an actual ECW style mask on, and he came out with a weird hoodie. So at least he decided, all right, well, boy, I look like an asshole last year. I might as well fix this. Number two. Yeah, I thought the match was very good, and the ending, it sucked, but what are you going to do? There's really no other option. Like you said, you can't job Ray out again. You're not going to have Sabu win the belt, but you didn't want him to job out if he was going to be a centerpiece of the new show. And on a third note, this kind of goes back to what you were saying, Claire, about the production and the show itself. Even when you look at Sabu, you're like, look at this guy. I mean, he had like the burns on his face, so like grizzled, and... I mean, he was a poster boy for that era. Like you said, JR, like Sting was for WCW. I think even more than Sandman, maybe Raven. But Sabu was really the face of that promotion in terms of what it was. I mean, he all scarred up and face, you know, he always had bandages on and everything. I mean, he was the face of that company.
He really looked like bruised and battered and just
yeah.
like not like physical bruises, but just you could tell the years of this had weighed on him.
He's definitely older looking than he probably was, you know, just so worn down. And you know, but the match I thought was very good. I mean, they did throw everything at each other, but as for the ending, I mean, what are you gonna do? There's really nothing you could do. I mean, you can't have a count out, you can't have a DQ, it's an extreme rule, so the only thing you do is knock each other out and call it a draw, old school house show draw.
They could have done, you know, something like...
I got an idea, but I'll let you put yours out first.
All right. I was going to say just have a bunch of guys come out and turn into a giant brawl that just like ends. Like have them do that spot and then just start to climb into the ring and then, you know, pick anyone that's trying to make a name for themselves in the new ECW. They come out and they attack and then someone else comes out and you just turn into the wild ECW brawl. And you could even immediately transition to another match if you want. I mean, I think they chose to let the gravity of this moment sit, but if you wanted to maybe save things, you could have had, you know, maybe the match that's next was kind of a hook match. Maybe you move that along and maybe you put Balls Tanaka here where that some wild, crazy segment leads right into that. Something along those lines to make it feel that ECW feel. What's your
By the way, who was that fuck the actual dude that called off the match had this like the weirdest accent. It was like
oh, that was
the he's like, this match is over.
Yeah, that's the doctor. The what's his name, Scott?
Dr. Ferdinand Rios.
Yeah, he's been a doctor forever back there. He was in wasn't he in Beyond the Mat or something? Wasn't he the one that was like Foley's doctor?
I think he was in Beyond the Mat, yeah.
He's been around forever.
Yeah, he has.
But I was thinking that we already had an issue earlier where we had to get someone on this show somehow. So I was thinking you could have these guys kind of do what they did. They go out and kill each other with a bunch of cool moods, get over with the crowd, and maybe both guys are laid out. And then you have Big Show come out and fucking chokeslam Sabu through a table. And now he says, I'm the man in ECW now. You're the old guy. You're out of here. So you set up this feud, and then Ray still gets to keep his title. And Sabu's that would not hurt. I think Sabu could actually lose clean and still be over and have no problem because he's Sabu. He's eternally over. But if they do want to protect him a little because he just got there, you just have Big Show kill him, and they're going to feud anyway. So I think that would have been the perfect solution.
Yep. Beautiful.
Mm. Yeah, I like both your guys' ideas.
Because and you really put the heat because everyone would have been mad at Big Show. So, I mean, you want him to be hated anyway as a heel. So I think that would have been I like that idea. I think that would have been the spot to do it. And then you get everyone really angry at him. And they're still going to boo, but whatever. At least it's furthering the greater good. I mean, the spot was really cool. So at least they made the spot count.
Yeah, I would still do the spot and then have Big Show come out. He could even plop Mysterio on Sabu, you know? So he'd still, you know, they both get over as they both just killed each other. But you still get to have Ray get a win and actually end the match at least.
All right, Scott.
I concur. Great analysis, guys. And I like both your theories of endings. But unfortunately, that neither of them happened. It ends in a draw, and Rey Mysterio retains his world championship because they took the heavyweight out because it looked really dumb. But it returns.
Tiny
next
champion.
Did they specifically just take that word out when Rey held the title?
Yeah. I think the first time I noticed it, JR.
I did notice that they said a world, and I then, huh?
It just says world. When he had it, they just called him world champion.
And new world bloated HGH gut champion.
Yes. I mean, that's the other thing that stood out to me is how, I mean, I'm so used to seeing, chubby Ray the last few years. He's actually looking pretty slim, especially with those old tights on. He looked quite svelte. Maybe one of his last svelte years.
Maybe they should have sent him to ECW. It was like a rejuvenation. I don't know if his body could have held up, but, I mean, Ray looked awesome here. I mean, he was moving around like the old Ray, too, and some of the bumps he took, that one where he lands on the open seated chair on his ass was fucking nasty. And
yeah,
I mean, he was really letting loose. You could tell he made a concerted effort after last year, after the disaster, where he just got booed. Maybe did the 619 and everything else, and everyone just shit all over him to come out here and really let loose and deliver. So
yeah, definitely. And being champion, he probably had a responsibility too. So, all right, next up, probably I guess you could say co-main event of this show. I mean, this whole situation, a lot of play on the air, a lot of play, including a big return. But give us the whole backstory, the whole saga to this point of this six-person intergender tag match.
All right, lots going on. So this is Terry Funk, his return, but also his final WWE pay-per-view appearance. Following the show, he would head back to the indie circuit, made stops in TNA in Japan, would be inducted in the Hall of Fame in 2009. Still wrestled, I think, this year, right? So still going. Final pay-per-view record 3-4. On 5-1, Edge had Mick Foley on the cutting edge, ripping on Foley over the WrestleMania match. Foley challenged Edge to a match, and he accepted, saying Foley could choose the type of match that would happen the next week. On 5-8, Foley chose a triple threat hardcore match and brought out Tommy Dreamer as the third participant. Throughout the entire night, Foley and Edge brutalized Dreamer with a barbed wire baseball bat, pinning Tommy. They shook hands and left. The next week, Foley discussed the previous week and said Terry Funk had been calling him all week, questioning his actions. Foley brought out Funk and told Funk that his WrestleMania match with Edge was the best match and that ECW was beneath him. He said he would always defend his legacy as the greatest hardcore wrestler ever and vented his anger over Funk not showing up for the ceremony held in his honor, saying that Funk demanded more money to attend. Funk then baited Foley into a fight by claiming that Foley's wife was a whore, his kids were bastards, and WWE sucked. During the brawl, Edge and Lita came down to help Foley, and the three of them left Funk bloodied. On 5/22, Foley brought Edge out and announced that Edge was all right with hardcore wrestling, and then attempted to attempted to award him the honorary hardcore title he had received in 2003. Edge said he wasn't worthy, and then had Lillian Garcia announce them as co-champions. As the love fest continued, Paul Heyman came out on stage and claimed that Foley was a prostitute. But Foley shot back, and he was a real-life action figure while Heyman was washed up. Heyman then issued a challenge to Edge and Foley to take on any two ECW stars at the pay-per-view. Foley turned it down, but after Heyman took a jab at Lita, Edge accepted. Foley and Edge charged to the stage, but Tommy Dreamer and Terry Funk met them at the entrance. A week later, Foley and Heyman had a face-to-face debate in which they torched each other with some barbs. Heyman announced he had drafted Kurt Angle, and Angle came out and took down Foley. 6-7, Edge defeated Dreamer. As we talked about last week, during the match, we had a brawl. According to the third book, this entire angle was Mick Foley's idea. He had some grand plans and wanted to incur on a major scale and envision it involving Vince McMahon. While the feud was greenlit, it wasn't like Foley had drawn up. Foley wanted to draw on the past, bringing up his past in ECW with Funk and even reliving his promos with Funk when Funk had ripped on WCW and Foley defended it, drawing the ire of ECW fans. One major problem was in Foley's way. The mainstream audience didn't care about Tommy Dreamer or really Terry Funk and didn't really pick up on the enough to rally behind Funk ragging on WWE, so everything fell flat. Adding to the mess was the fact that Raw was already booked for certain arenas, meaning the majority of this feud was built up in the Southwest, where it did not catch on like it may have in the Northeast. Originally supposed to be a tag match, expanded to a six-person tag before the match. So I want to get into the match and everything that goes about it, but let's take a break here for a second, guys. Tell me about the build. What did you think of the build, Mark? You know, from, I don't know if you've gone back and watched any of it or just from kind of watching the video package.
Video package and is all I got.
All right, but, so any thoughts on that, Scott, good. You can dive in.
No, I mean, I thought it was actually is a brilliant move to turn Foley heel because it's not – if you heard a rumor that ECW was coming back and Mick Foley was going to be involved in the big angle in the this pay-per-view, you wouldn't think he would be a heel. But it's actually really classic Foley. It's kind of a character he's played a couple times, turning on the hardcores. And it's really a classic Foley move, and I thought it was a really good angle to further get Edge over as a heel and to really build to this match. And I mean, again, I only saw a 2-minute video package, but I liked it.
Well, the thing is, too, like I said there, you know, a minute ago, is it fell flat, and it almost felt like, God, these guys deserve better. And it was, you know, a good thing that it was happening where it was in the Hammerstein, you know, because it gave them a chance to at least like pay it off in the right environment, like instead of just some random sitting on Raw. But the whole, like, when Funk said, you know, your wife's a whore, your kid's a bat, like, that was straight from the Bischoff stuff and that Foley did, you know, defend WCW in, like, 94. And it was so hot then, and it felt so flat now. He's like, and just seeing them completely re-rip the material they use word for word.
Right.
And a part of the problem, too, is it was so rushed. Like, it didn't evolve. Like, in ECW, everything had evolved. Foley's, you know, the way...
It was almost like a tribute angle. They just kind of rush it to put it out there.
Right.
Like, hey, remember how Foley does this?
And
done
I don't
this
know if it was
times?
Even a tribute per se. In Foley's mind, it was going to be killer. You know what I mean? This is how he looks at things. But in many ways, it was like it was so rushed that they didn't really get to expand on it. Like they needed a slow, you know, months of Foley turning on his past and defending Raw. And even though but it's tough to do because you're admitting Raw sucks, so they're not really going to do that. Now, if this had happened after ECW launched on Sci-Fi, then maybe it makes sense, and you can have him going on that show and in front of at least theoretically those fans. You know what I mean? So it's a tough act to pull off when you're not in front of the crowd that cares about what you're railing against. So like, you know, why are they going to boo Foley defending WWE when they're in front of WWE? It felt so out of place, the whole thing.
I mean, originally I liked that Funk came back. You know, after watching it today, I definitely felt like they hit the accelerator. The problem is Foley loves these very, very cerebral storylines. And this is one that definitely needed like 6 weeks, not 2.5 or whatever. I mean, this definitely needed, I think they waited, you know, they were in a quandary because... They didn't want to mention ECW.
I don't think they waited too long. It's just they didn't have the weeks needed. You know
right,
what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, they started as soon as they could, I think.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point. They were stuck in a pickle because they couldn't start like the week after Mania because we didn't know about ECW for another 2.5 months or whatever. So, but I mean, to Foley's credit, I mean, it seemed like a good storyline if you gave it 8 weeks and didn't have to do it in Phoenix and wherever
they
were.
I still don't know if it would have worked. I feel like the only way it would have worked is if they did a show in this exact environment where everyone, that's where he does the turn. Like they almost needed to do, I don't even know. an ECW preview or a head-to-head show in the Manhattan Center in front of this crowd, and he turns on Funk, and they do the whole thing there. You know, it's like, otherwise, I don't ever seeing any WWE crowd caring that he defends WWE. It's you can't recreate it because you don't have the ECW environment that you had the first time.
Right. Yeah, that's the problem. They just didn't have a big enough template to really execute it the way they wanted to, and it came off kind of flat. But on this night, at least they were able to kind of put everything into one package and ended up being very entertaining, as you're going to tell us.
Yeah, it's like almost like none of that even mattered. So Edge and Mick Foley joined forces out of respect. Foley goes back to his anti-ECW roots. We bring back Funk, who, if you remember, had missed 2005. So I think we talked about this last week, Scott, a principal. I think he worked the Shane Douglas show, I believe. But this time around, he's here. So Foley put a lot of this together, like we talked about. And, of course, he has a masterful promo in the beginning where where they chant, "You sold out." And it's one of his best lines of all time, where he's like, yeah, I sold out. Madison Square Garden. That's like one of my favorite Mick Foley lines ever. He jokes about the invasion. You can tell he's on cloud nine. He's in his full-on camp. You know, this is where that stuff works. You know what I mean? Where he's just out there being goofy, mainstream, WWE, Mickey Foley, you know, palm of his hands playing with the ECW fans. Foley brutally bruised the face, like we saw last week from the head-to-head when he took that hard-way beat down by Funk. Edge rips the fans, says they'll go home and jerk off to pictures of his girlfriend. Lita shits on them, too, calls Dream of the Innovator of Silence, which I thought was funny. And then rips on Beulah. Dreamer, Funk, and Beulah come out. Of course, I believe this is Beulah's first appearance since the Dudleys took her out, right, Claire? Do you remember? I don't think she ever returned right after they dropped her with the 3D.
I don't remember. Yeah, no, I think that was the last time she appeared anywhere, as far as I know.
So she makes some slut jokes at Lita's expense, and the match officially becomes a six-person affair instead of a tag. Edge and Dreamer with the basic stuff until both tag out. Then Funk targets the bruised eye of Foley with punches. Foley teases he's going to leave, but it's all just a ruse to bait Funk in. And then we all quickly go to the floor with all four men brawling and weapons started to fly. Foley and Dreamer win that battle. I'm sorry, Funk and Dreamer win that battle. Continue to dominate inside the ring. We get a baseball slide kicking a trash can into Foley's face. Edge smashes Dreamer with a sign as Foley turns the tide of Funk with more strikes. Edge smacks Dreamer with a ladder, but Dreamer dodges a spear and hip tosses Edge into the ladder. Funk does the spinning ladder gimmick that he always used to do, whacks Edge and Foley. Funk then climbs the ladder, but Edge shoves him off, and that was a pretty nasty bump for the old man. Edge and Foley pull out the barbed wire board and then suplex into it, Tommy into it, who grossly pulls himself free. Funk trips them up on the board and onto the board falls on the. Let me try that again. Funk trips him up, and the board falls on Foley. The crowd chants for fire as Foley gets yanked hard back onto the board. Edge crotches Dreamer on the barricade, but gets mowed down by some Terry Funk punches. Foley rips free and slams the board on Funk. Foley hammers and grates Funk with an extra piece of wire, and he's just gushing blood now as the crowd chants for him, but officials come out and bring him to the back, and that leaves Dreamer alone. Lita leg drops the barbed wire bat into Dreamer's crotch as the crowd chants for Sandman. Foley gets Sacco claw on Beulah until Tommy makes the save. Edge clobbers Dreamer, and Foley gets Sacco on him until Edge hits a spear. Edge pulls Beulah into a pump handle as Lita mocks her, and then Funk returns to the crowd. His head is all bandaged up with a barbed wire bat in his hand. Dreamer hits stereo low blows as Funk returns and bashes both Foley and Edge with the bat and the gut in the back. Beulah lights the barbed wire bat on fire, and Dreamer nails Foley with it a few times while the final driving him off the apron onto the barbed wire board, and that was a wild spot. Edge then knocks Funk off the apron onto Foley onto the barbed wire as well, so they're both old and just rolling around in the barbed wire. Pretty nasty. Dreamer DDTs Edge and then chokes him with the wire. Beulah comes in and takes down Lita. We get the cat fight spot. Dreamer grabs Lita and gives her a Death Valley driver to a huge pop. Dreamer poses, but Edge grabs him and hits a takedown with the wire. Edge then spears Beulah and pins her with a sex thrust for the win. One of the most demeaning and perfectly Edge pinfalls of all time, as he just bent her legs back and basically was thrusting into her as he was pinning her. Edge absolutely had to win this match. He's the biggest future star of the four. No reason that Foley and Dreamer, or Funk and Dreamer, had to win, or that Foley should get the pin. Dreamer carries Beulah off to an ovation. Ovation as Funk rides in the wire. I thought that was funny. Match was awesome. A bloody wild brawl. The crowd is going crazy. All six go way above and beyond what they had to do. Edge continues the star-making year. Foley, Dreamer, and Funk get one last hardcore go-around in the Hammerstein. The crowd ate it all up. I think, you know, across both one-night stand shows, this was the best match for that old-school ECW feel. They went all out again, you know, more than they had to do, Scott. What'd you think?
They definitely went over the top. There's a few visuals that will never leave me. Number one, Lita was still looking pretty super hot. I just had to point that out. Funk looks the same. I mean, I know he's old and all, but I feel like he stopped aging about 10 years before. If you go to, like, Barely Legal 97, he pretty much looks the same as he does here. Maybe a little more hair, but he roughly looks the same. To back up your point, JR, Edge, super credibility with the fans in 06. Fully engaging in these matches, not shying away from the violence. I think he needed that, kind of like Orton had it in 2004. And you can thank Foley for that. Foley definitely wanted to help put these guys, put him over anyway, Edge, both by, you know, putting him over at WrestleMania and helping put him over on the same side in this match. And number three, probably the best visual of the whole night is Funk coming through the crowd with the bandages and the blood seeping out of his eye and the 2x4. I mean, that's Funk. That's just Funk right there. No one else could pull off something as, you know, maniacal as that, as Funk. So, I'm sure Tommy wasn't thrilled that Edge was, you know, dry banging his wife on the pin, but what are you gonna do? It was definitely a match that you knew was gonna have that extra violence factor. It had to, and kudos to all those guys. I mean, you know, it could have amped it back a little bit, but they didn't, and you know, it made for a great match, and particularly for Edge, who needed the win to advance his storyline of being the rated R piece of shit, and he did that. What do you think, Claire?
Did you say dry banging?
I don't think I ever
heard that one.
I called it the hump pin for the win in my notes here. especially how Edge thrusted with the every count, the 1, 2, 3. I mean, oh boy, it's times like these. It was very ECW. Let's put it that way. I mean, it was definitely the most entertaining. Violent match of the night, and I think that was the goal. So mission accomplished. Well, actually, no, I don't know. Well, the main event was awesome too, but it did in a totally different way. But man, yeah, they did. This was more than I thought I would see from a 2006 Mick Foley. But I wasn't expecting all the blood, even, and I definitely wasn't expecting all of the female violence. But I guess I should have, because I seen it all watching it all the 90s ECW. So I know they wouldn't do this in 2016. So again, we kind of just forget like how quickly some things have changed. Because I just don't think you would see any kind of. I don't think you'd see women get speared on TV. Then again, we saw Stephanie get speared, so I don't know. But she didn't get humped by Roman Reigns afterwards. So,
could you imagine though?
but how? But you want to get Roman Reigns over it? By the way, that is how you get Roman Reigns
dry
over
bang Stephanie.
If Roman Reigns dry banged Stephanie McMahon at WrestleMania, he would have gone from he would become the biggest face immediately. So. I should be booking this shit.
Speaking of Stephanie, the other great, like you said, JR, the other great line is when he goes, but let's talk about the true innovator and the true visionary of ECW, Stephanie McMahon. Long live the Alliance.
That was great. Long live the Alliance was amazing.
So great. So Team Edge wins in an incredibly bloody match. Mm-hmm. And kudos.
I love, too, the couple of spots that kind of get forgotten are the two towards the end where Edge, Dreamer chokes Edge with the barbed wire around the neck. And then when Edge wraps it in his face and yanks him back into the Edge-O-Matic, whatever the move that is. It was awesome. I mean, you know, when I say went above and beyond, and I don't mean it was overkill in any way. Like, I appreciated it all. It's just they didn't need to do what they did, and they still went out and did it all because they cared. Like, they wanted this to connect. And the difference between this to me and like the Dudley's match in the year before, that was just like a gratuitous exhibition of ECW. This worked so well because it had the feud behind it, it had the heat behind it, and even though the build had been a little soft, it's still all there. Like, if you're watching the show, you get what they're trying to say, you get what they're trying to do. So even if the promos had fallen flat on Raw, and none of it mattered, because you still understand what the story they're telling here, you know?
Right.
Funk and Dreamer are the stalwarts of ECW, the legends, they'll defend it till the death. Mick Foley is always goes for the biggest payday, and he cares about his legacy, but he's also a whore. And Edge is just, you know, the smarmy prick who thinks he's better than everyone else. So the story itself was natural, you know? So it fit perfectly in front of this crowd. So even if the build wasn't there, they could have rolled this thing out with no build and still had to be a killer environment.
Yep, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And Edge reaps the benefits of it and gets the win. So why don't we take a break? We got two matches left. Claire, your thoughts on the show so far?
It's quite enjoyable, and as I discussed with JR over the before the show, I'm pretty much going on 4 hours sleep, coming off a very hectic morning of flying back to LA, and I'm so exhausted and so delirious, and it's a really fun show to watch when you're delirious, so that's cool.
Because most of the crowd was.
Right? Yeah.
I feel like the audience probably was.
I feel like I was really on their level, so I was pretty immersed in it. So I'm enjoying it.
JR, entertaining?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep, of course.
Definitely. All right. Well,
there's not a slow moment on the show so far.
No.
At no point was I bored. At no point I'm like, well, okay, I'm just going to go to the, go to take a crap and while this magic goes on. I never wanted to get up. I never wanted to go do something else. So that says a lot.
All right. When we come back, our last two matches, including the big one, the WWE Championship. But first, many, many words, most of them by Claire, and most of them unintelligible. Because!
I've been waiting all night for, I know, I was going to botch it. Waiting all day for a Sunday night. Edge is dry, banging Beulah, I wonder if she's tight. All right, guys, take a break.
You don't wonder.
I know the answer.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscullo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered too with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClune Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Christopher Daniels. I'm a national treasure, an idol to millions, and I've got the rear that makes the girls cheer. And you're listening to the Place to Be podcast. Please continue, because I'm great and so are you.
All right, Nation, we are back. We've been waiting all day for this show, of course. Here talking One Night Stand 2006 with Mr. Mark DeClaire. Joining us as always. He barely made it in from the desert, but he was there. And we had your compadre from the Super Extreme Vault on deck ready to step in. Glenn Butler, it was a roller coaster day for him.
Got bumped.
It was multiple times he thought he was in, but he was out. What's in, though, is PlaceToBeNation.com. Lots going on. Visit the site. tons of stuff. Podcast dropping left and right. Of course, New Between the Sheets dropped today, looking at this week in 1992 with our buddy Les Moore from Talking Sheet. So be sure to check that out. Plus all the other accoutrements that go on with PlaySimulation.com. Want to inform you all, though, of a brand new feed. Because there's a lot of stuff going on. PlaySimulation.com, of course, has multiple podcast feeds, and many of them can be found on iTunes. Actually, all of them can. There is the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast feed. And for now, going forward, that feed is going to host all PTBN-based wrestling podcasts. So currently, as of a week ago, formerly of a week ago, it also included kind of all our pop stuff, you know, the Glenn Butler podcast Spectacular, the Hard Traveling Fanboys. All that stuff was involved in that feed. Now we're creating a brand new feed called PTBN Pop that's going to house everything to do with pop culture outside of the world of wrestling and sports. So this, like I said, is all the comic stuff. It's going to have the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour, the Hard Traveling Fanboys Podcast, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Rank and File, the non-wrestling editions, Imaginary Stories, and then the new Lucha Undead. The crew there, actually, it's a beer podcast looking at microbrews. So a lot of fun there. The Lucha Undead, check it out. Timothy and Adrian, pop culture, including the bi-weekly episode, like I said, about beer. So that's a must listen. So be sure to go to iTunes, subscribe to that feed, and like us. Leave us comments, rate us on iTunes. It helps us out. It helps get us noticed. So if you haven't done that yet, pop over to iTunes, rate the pop feed. Also rate the Place to Be podcast feed if you haven't done that, because that helps us too. That gets all our other shows out in front of people and helps us get ranked in the world of iTunes. And you can also, of course, look for the good old PWO PTBN podcast feed as well. That's where you get Between the Sheets with the big boys play, Titans of Wrestling. All that stuff is over there. You know, so plenty of stuff in iTunes, tons of podcasts. I can't even imagine if you're a wrestling fan and you're a podcast listener if you don't subscribe to our feeds, because we have hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of free content for you daily at PlaySimulation.com and on our podcast feeds in iTunes. Rate it, leave the comments, and subscribe. Thank you.
It is mind-blowing how many little podcast babies you guys have sprouted from this one thing here. It's it's honestly incredible. I mean, I listen to a large number of the shows, and I can't even get through all of them, and they're all so good that I'll end up even going back weeks later and then just re-listening to some stuff that I missed, because there's just such a wide variety, especially you know, with this new feed. So I'll take my check whenever you can get that to me for shilling for you extra.
You can reach out to Brad. The But, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it's like Bill Walsh's football tree here, Place to Be podcast.
That's
It's crazy. I mean, it was crazy 5 years ago. I think we were hoping we'd still be going. Not having this monster network that has grown.
Yes.
And not to take credit, because it's been a lot of hard work from a lot of people. It's just, you know, something I never imagined.
No, me neither.
Would grow out of what we have. So check it out. Go to iTunes. And also remember, if you're doing any shopping on Amazon, and I always hear people saying they're doing shopping on Amazon, so if you are, take the extra, like, 6 seconds of your day. Go to PlaySimulation.com. Scroll down the right-hand side. There's an Amazon link. You click that. It takes you right to Amazon. You can do all of your shopping. You don't need to do anything else, and that kicks money back to PlaySimulation.com to help keep things up and running. So, you know, none of us get paid or anything like that, but it helps keep the site up and running cost-free. So if you do that, it's such an easy step for you and such an easy way to support the site without actually having to contribute money. It's a way that you're spending money anyway, but you can go ahead and help us out. So, you know, if there's a couple of things we'd ask you to do here tonight, go to iTunes and rate us. Go to iTunes and leave comments, and click on the Amazon link when you're doing your online shopping. So that's it for that. So why don't we get back to the land of extreme, Scott? One Night Stand.
That's right. Back to Hammerstein. Back to the Manhattan Center. And we get a good little match here. This one, a return, JR, from a guy we hadn't seen since last year's One Night Stand. And then another ECW stalwart, who I believe is probably his debut. But and that is Mr. Masato Tanaka, who, of course, we saw last year at One Night Stand 05, taking
on... I think
he's
getting a win tonight. Yankees won 5-2.
There you go. Masato Tanaka. Taking on a guy who loves the WNBA, Mr. Balls Mahoney.
Yes.
The hell we find him?
The Balls Man, of course, came from ECW. I guess he had been around, right? Was he? No, I guess not. He was in Smoky Mountain, Boo Bradley, and then went to ECW, and that's where he stayed as Balls. Yes, this is his official debut. He would be signed for the brand as well, so he does hang around. So we'll be seeing more of him. And, of course, in recent times, he passed away over the last, I think, 6 weeks or so. So sad story there, of course. Addiction got the better of him. So we get the show stealer Tanaka back again, gets a great ovation, in great shape. A guy that I'm surprised didn't know. What the hell was he doing? I guess he was probably active in Japan, too. But a guy that could have used, you know, to
absolutely
get his brand over. Because, I mean, he was super over. It looked great. I mean, I don't know what condition his brain is in, but body-wise, looking good.
He died on April 12th.
Balls.
Balls. At the age of 44. Way too young.
So we get some crisscrossing and hip tosses early. Balls works to Jerry over some punches, but gets dumped to the floor. To Jerry dives out, but Balls pushes him to the floor and hammers away. It's a slow match. Everyone's just kind of sitting there waiting for the chairs to come. Balls finally complies. He grabs a chair and smacks the Jerry with it on the floor. Back inside, Balls hits a superplex for a two count. Taz makes jokes about Balls' name. And that kind of reminded me that the commentary has been very solid. We haven't talked about it. I thought it was Knight's upgrade from last year. Because last year, while Foley was entertaining, remember, he did a lot of self-serving. When I did this, when I did that, when Funk told me this, when I, you know, Heyman told me that, when I was in ECW, when I was in WCW, all about Foley, all the stories about Foley. You know, it was nice to have Taz out there really pushing the brand and the story. So I thought that was a cool, you know, cool change of pace. And I thought it really improved the commentary from last year. So after that, Balls hits a disgusting chair shot for the win. I thought it was kind of a waste of Tanaka. He basically just came out and did pure job duty and took a really disgusting chair shot for no reason. I mean, just no reason at all. Like, they could have put anyone in this spot. And I love Tanaka. But you fly him out here, you put him in this situation, you let Ball scramble his brains, and then he just jobs. So, I mean, you know, I know Balls are sticking around, and he should get the win. But, I mean, you could have thrown anyone out there to take a shit-kicking.
I mean, this is basically the death spot, and they put Masato Tanaka, who is just like a legend, in the death spot to just job real quick. It seemed odd, unless...
I guess he was kind of in the death spot last year, right? Or almost near it. And it was awesome because they let them go. Like, this was, yeah. Like, what are they doing? Like, you know, go ahead. Sorry, Claire.
No, that's all I got. Yeah. I mean, the only good thing I took from this match is that we got the classic ECW, you know, beer in the face spot where, you know, Balls will take the fans' beer and throw it in his opponent's face. So we got that. That's all.
What do you think, Scott?
Waste of Tanaka, though. I mean, he should have either not been there or done something. Right.
Yeah, that's my point one. I mean, I don't know if he was – I'm sure he spoke the English language fairly well, if he was a traveling wrestler, not just Japan but everywhere. He should have stayed. I mean, he was awesome. Good
shape.
He might
have had something going on. You know, I mean, I don't know. He
true.
You know, he could have been busy elsewhere. But yeah. Beyond that, like, to use him like this – like, last year was perfect. You know what I mean? They used him perfectly. He doesn't need to win. But to have him just job out was weird.
Yeah. He definitely looked in better shape even than last year, too. I think you mentioned that. I mean, it was a fun little spot fest. I wouldn't say it was a squash, but it was a spot fest. And kind of a sad note here, you know, Masato Tanaka has two matches on WWE pay-per-view, well, technically, under his belt, and both of his opponents are dead. Which is kind of sad.
Well, at least Styles didn't tell Balls to kill himself.
Well, that's true, too. If Tanaka had no business ventures.
He's active in Japan. He's still active in Japan.
I mean, he's only 43.
But he was. It seemed like he had a career going on there.
Yeah,
he's still going today. So.
Yeah, he's currently in between Pro Wrestling Noah and 0-1.
Blows my mind that this guy is still going. When Stephen Graham told me that on the show, I couldn't even believe it a few months ago.
Yeah, still working.
I assumed he was 10 years retired, but nope.
I mean, he debuted in 93, so it's not that old. When
it's
you think
more
about
the beating
it.
I've right, seen him right. take over the years.
Well,
that
especially
I can't
the chair shots to the head. Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Right. I mean, what him and Awesome did last year was ridiculous. I mean, they were just killing each other. You know, absolutely ridiculous. So Balls Mahoney gets the win and gets himself ready for his new job on the big brand. Which brings us to our main event. Well, no, before our main event, we have a little, we have this little goofy segment. Go ahead.
So Eugene, who's still around, believe it or not, wanders out before the main event. Everyone's pissed off. Eugene said Eric Bischoff told him he was smart. He's as smart as the ECW fans and says he's hardcore. The crowd boos him. Eugene reads ECW poetry, which, you know, commenting on all the different stars. And that ends when Sandman comes out to his new music, all minted and ready to go for the new ECW. Sandman slimmed down as well. Gets to the ring, canes the shit out of Eugene. And I want your take on this. And I know it's kind of what it is at this point with Eugene. He just is what it is. Were any of you uncomfortable watching Sandman cane a mentally handicapped person over and over? Like, I know you kind of have to accept what you
only because I've already seen Triple H, like, bloody him up. That right. It's like, I'm immune to it at this point, just watching this over the years unfold here. But yeah, kind of. But not really, because it's – I mean, honestly, the Edge humping Bulo was a little more and like holding her like that and like manhandling her, that made me more uncomfortable than you know, seeing Eugene, who at this point, whatever, everyone's kicked his ass.
I mean, really, was there no other like trash bag heel, low level heel in ECW or in WWE?
That's the weird thing, that it was Eugene,
Rob Conway or something.
I mean,
right, you know, some like piece of shit low level heel like a Rob Conway or something, or one like Cade Murdoch or something.
Yeah,
you know?
I guess they figured that they would just hate on him and boom.
I guess if there's one place where beating up a retarded guy is gets you over as a face, it'll be ECW.
Right.
I love the way you said that, Claire. I think that should go in the next open.
There you go.
If there's any place to beat up retarded guys, it's ECW. Yeah, all right. Now,
yeah, so but it was a little bit weird. So anyway, it was just putting over Sandman for TV, get him some right. love. He didn't have a match.
Isn't it sad that Sandman was in better shape now than he was in like 1994 or 1995? Right. He was awful looking in 1995 and 96. But all right, time now for our main event.
TB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4.
I could have made his ass a real man. Something I wanted, but I never was pushing.
Place to be Nation, it is time once again for another Vincent Kennedy McMahon health update. And it turns out Vince is healthy. He's been healthy for a while. I don't know if you guys followed us back in the day when Vince was having some troubles. He was in a coma, but he's been perfectly healthy. But since it is ECW One Night Stand 2006 we're discussing here today, I thought I'd dig a little clip of Vince from the archive. This little audio clip I'm going to play for you right now is from just a few days after the debut of ECW on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Hey, Claire, get your ass in here.
Vinnie Mac, what's up, man?
Hey, listen, I've been watching all ECW Week. We had the head-to-head thing. We had the one-night stand. I watched the sci-fi show. And you know what? I've come to a conclusion, Claire.
What's that, Vince?
ECW fucking sucks.
Oh, come on, Vince. Didn't you watch that show?
Let's kill it.
All right, kill it. Fuck it. Sounds like a good idea to me, man.
Fuck off, Heyman. Hey, what's that song you've been playing? That shit's catchy. Number one in the nation. They see me rolling, they hating, patrolling, trying to catch me riding dirty, 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 trying to catch me riding dirty. Music's so loud, I'm swinging, they hoping, riding dirty, catch me riding dirty, catch me riding dirty, catch me riding dirty. Fuck you, Sabu!
They can see me lean, I'm tense, so it ain't easy to be seen. When they see me ride by, they can see the gleam, and I shine on the day.
Well, I guess that solves a mystery, Claire, huh? That's why ECW died,
go.
I guess, yeah.
Yep.
Interesting. All right. Very unique. All right, well, thank you, Vince. All right, let's go to our main event, the WWE Championship on the line for the first time inside the Manhattan Center since Yokozuna and Crush? No. I don't know.
Did they have a title defense on the when they did the Raw in Manhattan Center in 97?
Got me.
Well, was it before or after Final Four?
It was after, I think.
So
it was, but I know half the crew was like in Germany or something. So
and you get Steven Sutton on the line, or Ryan? Is Ryan Schmack available?
He'll let us know in a couple weeks. But I think
before hearing the answer, I mean, right? Would have been Sid.
Yeah, I don't think Sid was on that show. So and Taker, I know Taker was on the show, but I don't think he was. He obviously wasn't champion yet. So
no. I don't think so.
All right, so it might have been something in 93 then. It was probably more likely.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't think they ever went back there since. So.
No. I just watched that one. What was that? June 7th, I think, or May.
Yeah, there weren't
something.
Many after that, so that might be the last one.
So, how'd we get here, JR? How'd we get a title match on this show?
On 5/8, Rob Van Dam came out and said that he agreed to all things Joey Styles had said the week before and implored the fans to chant ACW in response. On 5/22, Van Dam came to the ring after a John Cena match, and Cena assumed he was there to cash in on his Money in the Bank shot. Van Dam told Cena he didn't want a match on Raw because he assumed he'd be screwed out of the belt. He informed Cena he would be cashing in his shot at One Night Stand. The two would brawl, which RVD won with the Van Daminator. The next week, RVD revealed that he was Paul Heyman's pick to join the new ECW. On 6/5, the two men signed their contract, and RVD and Heyman warned Cena there'd be no members of the Chain Gang at One Night Stand because he'd be in enemy territory. On the 6/7 special, RVD pinned Rey Mysterio in a non-title match, shocker, while Cena defeated Sabu by DQ. What did you guys think of doing the opposite this year, this time around, with the Money in the Bank? You know, we just had the huge surprise with Edge. Do you like the fact that they mixed it up this time around and had RVD just announce it and set up the match?
I especially like it watching it now, knowing that they never do this ever anymore. So, yes, absolutely. I love the idea of someone just saying, I'm going to take this shot. I'm going to tell you ahead of time. I'm going to face you one-on-one like a man. And I'm going to do it in front of, and especially with RVD and this situation, it was really the perfect time to do something like this. And I'm going to do it in front of my crowd at ECW. And I think he even said, I don't remember if I saw this in the video package, but I think he said something like, oh, and I'm going to make it the ECW title when I beat you. So it was a perfect scenario to do this. So yeah, absolutely good thing to do. And set a precedent that would never really be followed, that there's more than one way to cash in the Money in the Bank. You can do the sneaky move like Edge, or you could, you know, plan it ahead of time and just have a match at an important place in time.
Yeah, I agree. Unique. I think at the time they still hadn't figured out what to do with Money in the Bank, and they figured, well, a good guy has it. Can't really have him sneak up and cash in, so let's do it the old-fashioned way. So it worked out. I think it worked out that way as well.
Indeed. I agree.
Indeed. Yes.
All right. Here we go. Where we go? Great use of Money in the Bank, like we said, cashing in on his home field advantage, ready to smash that glass ceilings. Been waiting 5 years. We're finally here. RVD gets a massive ovation, such a rare, unique home versus away feeling with the entire building rooting on RVD. You don't get that often. You at least get like, you know, 80-20, 75-25. It's rare that you pretty much get pure 100% rooting for one guy, especially in such a small confines. So that was really cool. Cena comes into enemy territory as a pure heel, and he plays it up fully to the hilt. A very defiant entrance, amazing atmosphere. Cena keeps throwing his shirt to the crowd, but they throw it back at him. The crowd is just brutally vicious on Cena, tossing every nasty chant at him as the match gets started with a lockup. Cena plants RVD with a shoulder block and mugs for the crowd, but RVD hits a spin kick to a huge pop. Both guys trade big right hands with alternating booyah chants. Crowd is completely carrying this so far. Cena gets a power slam for a near fall as the crowd chants same old shit. So in response, Cena mixes it up and gets an axe blow off the top rope to the floor on RVD and then just glares at the fans. The crowd chants overrated as RVD hits a moonsault off the apron onto Cena. Cena blocks a chair shot and shoots RVD into the barricade, and they brawl into the fans. Cena grabs a fuck you Cena sign and punches RVD through it. That was really cool. Back at ringside, RVD hits a spin kick on the barricade and then a baseball slide and guillotine leg drop. RVD gets a near fall with a chair drop kick and rolling thunder with the chair. Cena blocks a split-legged moonsault with a chair and then hits a DDT on the chair. And then sets it up between the turnbuckles. And then I thought one of the grossest spots of the night, he slingshots RVD through it head first. Cena plays up the five-knuckle shuffle as the crowd is shitting all over him. He lines up the FU, but RVD slips out and hits a dropkick. Cena powerbombs RVD off the top to slow him down and starts emptying his arsenal to shut up the fans. And I thought this was a huge night for Cena. We'll talk about that in a minute. RVD tries for a slingshot back suplex but fucks it up, and then the crowd blames Cena, which I thought was funny because it was all RVD's fault if you watch the spot. RVD dropkicks Cena off the apron into the barricade. Cena comes back and gets an STFU as the crowd starts to panic a bit and starts to boo. RVD gets out of it. Cena wipes out the referee after he puts his hands on him and then hits a superplex. Cena smashes RVD with the ring steps in a great spot. And then, I love this, Nick Patrick shows up to count, of all guys. RVD survives. Cena dumps RVD to the floor, but someone in riot gear comes out and spears Cena through a table. And that unmasked to be Edge. The crowd chants, thank you, Edge. RVD hits a five-star frog splash, but with no referee, Paul Heyman comes out and counts three to a massive pop. And I thought this was an amazing experience. A great, well-booked match, but the finish never quite sat right with me. I hated that they did this tease with Heyman counting the fall, because you kind of were waiting for them to do some kind of dusty finish after. like the next week, and that's how they create the ECW title, you know? Like, to me, that felt, I don't know, it felt kind of weird. And, you know, the crowd being as hot as it did carried a lot of it, but that finish to me almost took them out for a second because they thought something was coming. Regardless, the match itself was good. You know, I think in front of any of the crowd, you'd just say it was well worked, but the crowd bumps it like multiple stars by being so great. They are rabid. They never stop. They go crazy. I thought it was a great capper to the night. Good payoff to Money in the Bank. You get a, you know, 2-for-2 on the year for people cashing in on Cena. You get a good job switching from reunion to the active product like we talked about, and then we get RVD celebrating in the crowd, and the locker room comes out to celebrate with him as well. So, Claire, what did you think of the match, and what did you think of the finish?
Cena is so good in this match, and he's really embraced this. I think it's actually helped him to be booed this whole time and get used to this, because even if he was anybody, you know, Rey Mysterio, for example, who's already saw that, but if anybody you put in here against RVD would have been booed. So Cena, if anybody, was the man to be in this spot. And he played it so well, just the subtle little things, you know, his subtle glares at the crowd, the way he slowly, meticulously would kind of work RVD and just in like the kind of way a heel would. It's kind of similar to how it's very subtle. It's not like he was outright. I mean, I guess you really can't really cheat in an ECW, you know, Extreme Rules match, but he wasn't being that heelish in his moves as much as his mannerisms and the way he worked and the way he cut off a lot of RVD's hope spots. I thought it was just very well done. It reminded me a lot, obviously nowhere near as good, but of a Daniel Bryan match at SummerSlam in 2012, I believe, or 2013, yep. Where Cena, same thing. The crowd was on, you know, Bryan's side, of course. He was the most over guy in the building, and Cena just subtly played the heel throughout the match without actually turning heel or doing anything, you know, truly dastardly. But he just, within the context of that match, he was playing a heel in a very effective way. And then that was the only way to really do this, I think. And he did it masterfully. So match I really love just because of that. I mean, yeah, if you took out the crowd, it would be like a decent match, but the crowd bumps it up, you know, a huge amount, a full star in you know, internet wrestling nerd speak. But and as far as the finish, I'm good with all of it. I think the only thing I don't like is the Heyman being the one counting the pin.
Yeah, I hate
and
that.
I did like the appearance of Nick Patrick, but the one thing that always got me about ECW finishes like this is, all right, we're talking about a no DQ match. Why do you need to bother with ref bumps? You don't right. need to do this. It's a no DQ match, so just have Edge come in and kill him, and that's fine. And there's a nice synergy there, though, the Edge costing Cena his second Money in the Bank cash in when he was the one that cashed in the first time. I like that, and it rekindles that feud while still getting RVD over, because like the sign said, if Cena wins, they'd riot. So yeah, you had to put RVD over here. You had to find a way to do it, and this was a perfect way to do it, and it rekindles a feud. Or I guess they said he was already the number one contender, so I don't know the, right. the storyline there. But and it's really they have really used tonight to A, try to – the theory is that it's to launch ECW, the show. But it's really – to me, the biggest thing coming out of the night is reestablishing Edge after – you know, I mean, a part of that was the Foley feud. But this is really upping him up a notch even more. Not only is he have that ridiculous performance and he's really getting his character over in the previous match, but here and here as well. Just the kind of that psycho look on his face after he takes Cena out and his kind of glare. I mean, he's really learned to incorporate these mannerisms to really give his character that extra edge, if you will. So I think he did a really good job, and it's really showing Edge's evolution, even in the last 6 months, even since he got that main event push and you know, beat Cena on the first time with the Money in the Bank. So good stuff all around. Yeah, I don't know what the Paul Heyman counting the pin thing, that just seemed kind of stupid and unnecessary element of it.
And it could have, you know, such a little thing as like if Heyman had brought out an ECW ref with him to count. You know, like that could have been small tweak. Instead, it just felt like they were going to screw things around. And I mean, they had the out if they wanted to do it like the next night, have, you know, them strip the WWE title from RVD. And then Heyman says, well, he won, so he's the ECW champion. Like, that's exactly what I thought they were going to do. Instead, I mean, the credit to them, they don't, but it seemed like they were building that way with Heyman being the one to count the pin. What'd you think, Scott?
I'll talk about the ending in a second, cause I'm completely different opinion, but I will give Cena his due. Definitely. From the minute he walked down the ramp, head down, belt over his head, pretty much telling the audience and that crowd, hate me if you want, fuckers, but gold's mine, not his. And instead of trying to, push himself on the audience. Like, I don't know if 2014 Cena would have done this. I don't know if he would. I think he would have been so trained to be the way he is now. I don't know if he would have adapted as easily as now when he was younger and a little more easily molded to the situation than if he was older. But he was fantastic, and he gave the look, and he's getting pissed off. They were throwing the shirt back, and he adapted perfectly. I applaud him for that big time. Number two, RVD kind of dictated the pace of the match with the crowd, and I think Cena, despite the chance, stayed focused, worked it right. Didn't work totally heel, but almost like his facial expressions almost told you, you know what? If this is the way we're going to have to wrestle this match, then you're going to have to deal with me wrestling this way, and tough shit if you don't like it. So, again, another evidence of Cena just really adapting perfectly to the situation at hand instead of trying to shove. Like, he didn't do what Ray did last year and try to shove his Cena-ness down everybody's throat. Instead, he adapted. As for the ending, I loved it. I had no issues with it whatsoever. In a vacuum. Because that's how ECW is. They're just, they make up their own rules. Ah, Heyman pinned him. Well, you know, Heyman did the count. So, well, it's ECW. Fuck it. Who cares? So I think in that aspect, in a vacuum, I think it's perfect ending for the
that
show.
That is a good point, Scott. It is very ECW. Oh,
yeah. Perfect ending to the show.
So
I think in a vacuum, looking back, it's like, all right, it's fine. I just remember at the time thinking, ugh, like, they're definitely setting up. First of all, Edge costs them, and then you do that finish, and it's, I don't know. It felt like just a little bit like a cheapened RVD's big moment, but I mean, at this point, you'll take whatever you get with RVD. You know, we're waiting for this 5 years earlier, and they do it now where RVD's kind of, you know, I don't want to say he's out of gas. He's still, you know, really over, but yeah, I mean, just look at what they got from him here versus what they could have had 5 years earlier. And it's like,
right.
You know, if they hadn't waited.
Right. No, yeah. I don't have an issue with it at all. I thought perfect, typical ECW make up the rules as you go along kind of thing. And screw you, Cena. You're in our building. You're play by our rules, which we don't have any. So I think I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. Did I think they were going to strip him? Nah, because I don't think they wanted to. I don't think WWE wanted to make Cena that reviled at that point. So I had a feeling afterwards that Cena was that RVD was going to keep it. And he was just going to walk around with. I wasn't expecting them to at the time have an ECW belt made yet.
Right.
So I thought he was just going to be WWE champion, and then he, you know, and then they do something later, tournament or whatever, and have a, their own ECW champion. But I was fine with the ending. I had no problem with it. I think the fans just wanted to have an ending where their guy won and the guy they hated lost,
that's what they got. I mean, it didn't affect them at all. It's just for a split second to me, it seemed like they were like, oh shit, you know, like because
right.
it just felt weird.
Right.
Do you guys think of everything Cena has done to this point? Was this the match? Was this the highlight so far of his run? Say, you know, so we'll call it since like WrestleMania 20 when he really was starting to become the heir apparent. Was this like his most legitimizing moment so far?
Yeah, I think this and the New Year's Revolution chamber pre Edge that he took that was his first real violent beating. Although you could argue that the JBL Judgment Day 05 does that too, but. This one, for me, because of all of the factors, not just the work rate part, but just adapting and being like, you know, I'm supposed to be a babyface, but I don't know. I kind of like Austin in Calgary at Canadian Stampede, where he adapted to being the heel, even though he had pretty much clearly been a babyface since March. Cena adapted to this surrounding the same way. So from a maturity level, JR, yes. I think overall he realized – I need to adapt to these situations as a main eventer, and he did that. So I say, yeah, this is definitely one of his biggest top one or two moments. Maybe this and the match with JBL at Judgment Day 05. Wait a minute, Claire.
Yeah, that would be the other match I would have mentioned is that Judgment Day match. But this is a totally different kind of performance. So that was sort of a violent retribution Cena, which was just very great to see. But then this just shows that his ability to adapt to the situation. So he played in that JBL match. He played a perfect angry heel finally get or angry face finally getting his comeuppance on the dastardly heel. And then in this case he did a totally different. Kind of a take on his character based on the situation. So it really does show his evolution, and I think it's – I don't know if it's his best match per se, but maybe his best performance, if that makes sense.
I think it's his first – it's his, like, transition to a veteran. You know what I mean? It's like we've seen a lot of
he's comfortable in whatever comes at him.
Right. It reminded me kind of like Rock's big moment with Hogan in Toronto where he just decides to go heel. You know, it's like it's one of those things where it's like, all right, Cena's listening. He pays attention. He knows what to do in that situation. And he came out and played up the role. He didn't try and force, you know, force something that wasn't there. And to me, that was like, all right, this guy, you know, he's kind of taking the next step now. And I think it is from here out over the next 11 months or so where he really becomes, I want to say that completes the next step to, you know, I don't want to say whatever the next level is for above where he is now, I guess. Like, to me, this around this time kind of ended the first chapter of his main event stint. And now from here till late 07 kind of builds his legacy even further and cements him as, like, instead of just being the current top guy, into a top guy, if that makes sense.
Yep, I concur.
All right, so what did you guys, Scott, what did you think of this show versus 05?
I love both for two very different reasons. Like we said, I think they were formatted differently. 05 was the nostalgia show that had great moments and like, wow, man, this is awesome the way it used to be. This show, they found a great way to make just as much of a nostalgia piece, but at the same time, make it relevant to what they're planning with ECW. So this, I think this was a tougher show for them to book because they wanted to make it relevant and not feel old, and they didn't. So as much as I love 05, I don't want to say I love this show more. I like them both equally, but I give you know, Paul and whoever booked it to a lot of credit for being able to balance between relevancy and nostalgia. They didn't have to do that as much in 05. They definitely had to do it here.
Yeah, I think 05 was sort of a better experience. It maybe felt a little more special, but this I think was a slightly better actual show. But right. It's close. They're the same and different in kind of a way. But they make a great back to back watch. Probably, you know, it's a great overall. They did a good job with both of them, and I'm glad they didn't keep going because they probably would have gotten watered down and shitty eventually. So I'm glad that we just have these two. There was definitely the risk of even doing a second one, but I think they did a good enough job of still keeping that ECW feel and magic. And I guess as long as you have it in the Hammerstein and you have those fans, the right fans showing up for it, you book it at least in a somewhat logical way, which they did for the most part, other than maybe the Masato Tanaka getting knocked out by a chair in like 2 minutes. I think it's a great show.
Yeah, I think 05 was a better spectacle, but 06 is the better like wrestling show, like you said. It's got, I think the match quality's better up and down the card. I mean, this show alone, you get Rey, Sabu, the tag, or, you know, the sick person, and then the main event, which are all like great matches, and you didn't get that level of quality in 05. I mean, the best match is probably Tanaka Awesome, which I would probably say is the fourth best match on the two shows, right? Would you agree there?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So there you have it. One Night Stand in the books. And of course, 2 nights later, ECW on Sci-Fi would premiere. And we'll work on a little something. Maybe we'll have a little something, not on this show, but on Place for Nation proper, to do with the 10-year anniversary of that show launching. So we're batting some ideas around. But otherwise, Scott, we'll be back next Monday with a really cool show. Of course, we're interviewing James Dixon, the author of the Titan Sinking series, Titan Sinking, Titan Shattered, and his new book coming out here on 1997. So really looking forward to that. We'll be talking to him. Titan Screwed, Lost Smile, Stunners, and Screwjobs is the book. So I believe it's available for pre-order currently. I'll pull up the information here. Of course, we'll talk much more about it. It looks like it's available now on Kindle Unlimited. So
there you go.
Check it out. So be sure to check that out. The first two were awesome. I'm sure the third one's going to be just as good. And we'll have James here next Monday for you. We'll talk all about the book. We'll talk about his experiences writing them. We'll talk about things he learned, you know, things he would maybe have changed about the process, if anything, his thoughts on the time period. So we'll dive into things quite a bit with James. Tune into that. And then 2 weeks from tonight, we'll be back with, what do we got? Vengeance 2006.
Yes.
So looking forward to that. All right. Claire, anything you want to plug or talk about before we go?
Oh, well, if you're going to make me plug, I will, of course, as always, plug lionsofliberty.com and the Lions of Liberty podcast if you want to hear me talk about things other than wrestling. And sometimes I even talk about wrestling. I've interviewed, you know, as you know, our man Kane and your boy RJ Brewer. So right. Once in a while, I get to tie things together.
Mm-hmm. You do. And big night for your girl Hillary, Claire. So
my gal.
Your gal.
Actually is my gal, because, you know, the worse people that those two parties can put up, the more people will think about other alternatives. So I think it's fantastic. Good for her.
Go Hillary. So anyway, that is not the belief of anyone at PlayStation.com, including myself. All right. So anyway, we're going to kind of wrap up. Claire, thanks for joining us. Glad you made
it.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Make sure you shake Glenn's hand on the way out. So wait in the green room.
I'm going to tag him in and slap his ass.
Just in case you passed out halfway through the show, he was ready to jump in at any moment. So, we look forward, hopefully, to the return of the Super Extreme Vault sometime soon.
Whooper! That's by Glenn Tribute.
Check out PlayStation.com every day. Do it! Sign up for those feeds on iTunes. We appreciate your support as always. So that's Mark. That's Scott. I'm Justin. We're out. We'll talk to you next week with James Dixon talking 1997. Take care, everyone.
Adios.
Waited all day for Sunday night.
Having some drink.
Headed to Duchess, so I'm feeling all right.
That was exhausting. I might have blacked out a few times in there. I hope it worked out all right.
Not that I want to, not to say, but if you only knew how easy it would be to show me how you feel. More than words is all you have to I took those words away. Then you